Join us in a world where you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Sit back as we discuss hard-won lessons from the best and brightest that the personal defense and competition shooting industry has to offer. Let us help you help yourself, no matter where you are in your personal path. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. Now here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at BallisticRadio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other things at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. And remember, if you're into the Instagrams and want to see the cool things that I put on the Instagrams, you can follow me at Ballistic J, the letter J. So, hey, Joe.
Hey there. Instagrams right now.
Are you on the Instagrams right now?
In the Snapgram thing.
I don't really do the Snapgrams thing. I don't understand it. Apparently, I am too old. But it's cool that you're on that. So, let's see if this episode goes a little more on task than the last one.
I can only hope.
You know, can't be any worse. Famous last words. Hey, guess what?
What's that?
This segment's brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, and maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't, I don't know, depends. You need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, or perhaps you have run out of space in your tiny, tiny home, I don't know, you can never really have too much ammo. Joining us, it's the legendary lawman, Chuck Haggard. Hey, Chuck, how's it going?
Not too bad.
So I've been told by every single person I have ever been in a relationship with that I communicate poorly, and apparently that has continued forward into the relationship I have with you. There was a time zone mix-up, and I will take the blame, even though I think it was your fault. and you're walking your dogs right now, which is cool because that provides the opportunity for us to live a day in the life of Chuck Haggard, and which I think is awesome. But thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
For those that don't... go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm reminded once again of that Rich Mason quote that I posted the other day, that people communicate seeking to be understood, and you often need to communicate so that you cannot be misunderstood, and those are two different levels of communication.
They are two very, very different levels of communication, and, you know, I was going to look and see if I could find our text log so I could at least satisfy myself as far as, that's good. I did. I found it. Okay. I'll still take the blame even though I'm looking at the text right now and I should. Anyway, for those that don't know, who are you and what do you do? And we will hop into the topic of today's show, which I will probably decide upon as you are introducing yourself.
Chuck Haggard, retired cop, unretired police officer, firefighter, have my own business, agile training and consulting, and I like guns, and I like to walk my dogs.
Well, there you go. I like long walks on the beach and sunsets and pepper spraying.
I'm swiping right.
So Joe's swiping right. That is amazing. I mean, it's the mustache. Wait, is swiping right good or bad?
No idea.
I don't know. Anyway.
I don't even know what that means.
I think it's a Tinder thing or maybe a Grindr thing. I don't know. Not Grindr. Okay. It's a Tinder thing, apparently. I believe swipe right is good. I don't. Anyway, I guess my first question for you is, so you've been in the applied violence game for a super, super long time. Not to say that you're old, but you've been in it longer than I've been alive or close to. And I was curious.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, thanks for hanging out with me, Chuck. I wouldn't. I'd be annoyed by me. But you're very you're very understanding, and I appreciate that. Is there anything that you've noticed makes people better suited for this than maybe other people from like a temperament standpoint or a just like, is there anything that in the course of your experience you've said, ah, that's a pretty good indicator that you might be okay in this field?
If you're talking about professionally,
sure.
Having some sort of emotional control or internal control, when we see people who lose it under duress, say critical incidents, things like that, they're lacking emotional control. If you can't control yourself, you can't control what's going on around you. And if your fight or flight response gets away from you, then, you know, you lose basically that part of your brain that makes us human, gives us the ability to think, operate complex machinery, things like that. You know, and that can happen in a fight or flight response situation. Basically, you know, if you look at the science of how our brain works, you know, you got your higher brain, your midbrain, and then, you know, your basically your lizard brain, your medulla that operates all your autonomic stuff. If you get excited enough, then your higher brain kind of shuts down and you're down in your mammalian brain. And if you listen to guys that present on this stuff like John Hearn, they talk about that's the, you know, the bear or the dog crashing through the screen door and getting away from you. That's where you see people panic, go cyclic with pistols, shoot the wrong people. That's where you see excessive force events in police work, things like that.
Well, and so is that something you can figure out pretty quick, just watching somebody, if they're, for lack of a better term, excitable? Or is that something that it's harder to spot?
Actually, if you have a good program, like when I was with Topeka, we did quite a bit of defensive tactics, you know, force-on-force stuff, things like that. And eventually, towards the end of the academy, the SWAT team, use of force instructors, firearms instructors, DT guys would all have a week with the recruits doing scenario training. And it was all interactive use of force decision-making. And, of course, like most places, years ago, we started out with basic, it was shoot, don't shoot. And then we were adding things like foam batons, inert pepper spray, verbal judo, things like that. So it was the whole toolbox got exercised. You know, is force called for in this situation? If so, what level of force? Do I need to escalate or de-escalate? You know, pre-assault indicator reading, things like that. And sometimes we would actually fire people for lack of performance if it was egregious enough. I recall one time we had a recruit officer in a car, simulated car stop. The simulated bad guy ended up out of the car trading shots with the recruit and the partner. And the recruit in question ran out of ammunition, looked at the gun, threw it at the bad guy, and then ran away, leaving their partner behind. We're going to call that not an optimal tactical response.
Hmm.
And then every once in a while, you would see cases like, you know, I think most people would expect if they're going to have an officer prone to excessive force, it's going to be the dudes. Because traditionally in police work, you see female officers tend to be a little bit better at verbal skills a little less quick to go hand-on. You know, depending on the situation, that can be a good thing or a bad thing, but it just kind of is what it is. But we had a recruit officer one time who every scenario she got into, she killed everybody all the time. That's kind of a problem if you're going to be, you know, working in a society with a constitutional level of use of force.
Yeah, it sounds like it might be. We got to go to break. So right now, Chuck Haggard's walking his dog, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the EDC-X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So before the break, we were talking with Chuck Haggard about professionals who are sort of in the applied violence field and some of the indicators that they might be good at that or not good at that. And you were telling a story about a recruit that when faced with use of force scenarios, essentially killed everyone present. Why do you think that was? Was there any, was that just a, like, no, it was either go or no go and there was no throttling in between for them? Or was it, what was that?
I don't know. In that particular case, I don't know. But it was a good thing. I think we can agree that we caught that early before recruit academy graduation. Because that would be a very, very bad thing to put somebody on the street that had that kind of temperament. And, you know, and I didn't see her losing it or, you know, like some of the police videos I've seen, somebody screeching at the suspect over the top of their gun, that kind of thing, where you could tell there's a loss of emotional control there. But in this case, just not suited for law enforcement. I don't know if it was intellectually, emotionally, mentally, whatever the case may be, could not make the proper decision at the right time. And, you know, not everybody is cut out for everything. And we had, I don't want to get too specific, but let's say we had a chief law enforcement officer scenario in my locality. And one of the guys that had the job in the past, really nice dude. It would be kind of like your grandpa, you know, nice dude. Everybody likes him, friendly to the public, et cetera, et cetera.
You've never met my grandfather. I can tell right now. So anyway, sorry.
Okay,
continue.
We're going to go with my opa then.
There you go.
Because he was a wonderful dude. But in this case, guy was a horrible chief law enforcement officer, because he couldn't make tough decisions. He didn't have leadership skills. He didn't hold people accountable, didn't make good long-term planning decisions. You know, and my analogy is, I love my mom. She was a wonderful lady, saintly, but she would also be a horrible chief law enforcement officer. Not everybody can do everything. One of the speeches I give recruits when I did that sort of thing was, there's a lot of people on the planet, Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, you know, I can just name off name after name after name, you know, who were wonderful people, made tremendous difference in other people's lives, and actually changed, you know, some of our perceptions of how the human race should live, that sort of thing. But one of the things they all have in common is they'd be horrible street cops. That doesn't make people who are good street cops better than other people. It just means people should go where their gifts and their temperament are suited to. You know, I'm not a brain surgeon for a reason. That's just the way it is.
I just imagined you with like a medical mask that has the mustache drawn over top of the mask, and it was the best thing ever. Now that image won't leave my head. So, and that kind of segues nicely into sort of something that I have been thinking about a little bit more, mainly because of my friendship with Claude Werner and, you know, all of the work that he has done on negative outcomes and things like that. And it seems to me, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, that one of the things that people really, really should be doing that not many people are doing is taking a real hard look at who they are as human beings and tailoring their self-defense plans accordingly. And what I mean by that is, I mean, maybe not everyone should carry a gun. Maybe.
Absolutely.
Does that
absolutely
make sense?
The case. Absolutely the case. And I've done work with people on exactly that premise. You figure out, you know, are they emotionally, intellectually, morally capable of doing that? Is that something that, and if not, you know, I'm not making a value judgment. It is what it is. But if you have a gun that you can't use, then, you know, you might as well have a rabbit's foot, because you might actually get some good luck out of the rabbit's foot, you know?
Right.
I had a gal one time, who's a friend of mine, that because of her circumstances, she had picked up a stalker. You know, she used to be with the district attorney's office, and she was adamantly opposed to guns. She'd already made that decision, adamantly opposed to guns, but she needed a personal security plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not my job to push guns on her. You know, she had grandkids over to the house. So, you know, she was worried about kids with guns, which I don't think enough people worry about.
Yeah, it's kind of an issue near and dear to my own heart, you know.
Yeah. So we came up with a personal security plan for her. You know, I'm like, you know, look, your backyard is a prowler haven. Your porch light on the back porch is burnt out. You know, what are we doing here? So we came up with a good, you know, beefed up locks, landscaping, lighting, surefire handhelds, pepper spray, and dry chemical kitchen fire extinguishers, and some training on how to respond, how to set up. And I think she had a really workable for her personal security plan for home defense that was completely solid. And, you know, and if she didn't run into, I don't know, cartel hitmen with machine guns coming through her door, she actually had a pretty good workable plan for defending herself and defending her home.
Right. Well, and it seems like, too, that maybe, and to be very clear, because I know people are going to try and take this out of context, I absolutely believe every single person should have the right, or excuse me, shouldn't have the right, does have the right to have a firearm without government involvement. It's that was the intention, and that's how it is. And there's a lot of things that have been done after the fact that I don't agree with at all. So I'm not saying that I think rights should be limited even a little bit. What I'm saying, though, is that not everyone should make the decision that they make, because I think it's made inside of a vacuum. And then the other thing, too, is that I don't think enough people really understand what a limited use case the gun is at times. Does that, am I doing a poor job of expressing that? But like, the gun only solves gun problems, you know?
Absolutely. There, you can't shoot people a little bit. Utilizing a gun is an act of deadly force. And, you know, even if you don't have shots fired in many places, like here in Kansas, we don't have brandishing per se that other places have. But if I put another human being in reasonable fear of death or great bodily harm, that's an aggravated assault. So if I pull a gun on another human being, I had better be in a scenario where I can justify it. Because you look at like a self-defense shooting, let's say it involves a death. You have a homicide. That is a murder under the law, unless it is justified by the circumstances of self-defense, you know?
Right.
So what you have done is committed a crime, that is basically forgiven or overlooked because the circumstances are that it was legitimate under, you know, the self-defense rules of the state you're in. In my particular state, if you were going to pull a gun on somebody, display a handgun, say, from concealed carry, to ward off some sort of situation, it better be a situation where you are under reasonable fear of death or great bodily harm, or, you know, you are in a scenario where you are seeing those pre-criminal assault indicators where you can justify, hey, I believe that this was a robbery about to happen, whatever. You can't just pull a gun for a lot of the reasons I have seen people pull guns, you know?
Well, I was going to say, and I think that that's actually an interesting conversation that we can have this next segment. I got to go to break right now. We're talking with Chuck Haggard. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the lumens from Surefire at the lowest price? No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and need an RMR in your carry gun now? BigTexOutdoors.com has those. Glock accessories? Yes! Fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike, everybody likes Ike, and you'll like Ike too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. And before the break, you were sort of saying that people can't just go pointing guns at other people for a lot of the reasons why they do that, yeah?
Yeah. And it really behooves you, particularly where you live, because that's, I mean, you know, wherever you go, there you are kind of thing. That,
yeah.
That's where you're most likely to get into something. If I'm going to travel, I research the laws along the way. What can I do in different scenarios? You know, am I going from a state that has a standard ground law, for want of a better term, to one where you have a mandatory retreat? That's important to know.
Mm-hmm.
One of our good friends, called me up here a couple of years ago and, was in a scenario where he went out to his vehicle and somebody was in the middle of burglarizing his vehicle. And he was in a situation where he could get his hand on his gun. But at that point he was like, can I use a gun in this scenario? You know, what am I doing here? He hadn't thought about what the law of his state was for that scenario and what he was legally allowed to do and not do as far as that goes. If I recall correctly, ordered the guy out of the car, told him to, get the hell out of there, called the police, made a report, that kind of thing, you know, gave him a description. But he wasn't sure, if I put this guy on the ground at gunpoint, you know, can I do that? Is that legally allowed in my state? What if he says no? Now what? You know, what do I do?
Yeah,
it's kind of some of these things that are entirely foreseeable. We really need to war game ahead of time so that we've got answers to these questions.
Well, and it seems like, too, that a lot of people. So what you just said, we really need to war game these ahead of time so that we have answers to these questions. The problem is that quite a few people that I know, not necessarily our peers, but like people that are getting into it, when I ask them about utilizing a firearm for self-defense, it's somewhere along the lines of, well, if I need to, I'll shoot someone. It's like, and it's a very like broad scenario, and there's no ambiguity involved, and there's no room for the don't shoot yet, as Craig Douglas would call it, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I totally get it.
So how do we, how and what should people be thinking about then?
Well, exactly, you know, foreseeable circumstances that they might get themselves in. Is it possible I could walk out to my car and I find myself in a car burglary in progress? That's, you know, one of the things that maddens me about people leaving guns in the cars. I've had more than one case where, well, you know, it's my right, I can leave the gun in the car. They can't take the gun in the store, let's say, and they don't have the gun locked up in something secure in the car. So they just leave the gun in the car. And then they go out to their car, and the car burglar's in their car with their gun.
Right.
Now what?
Right.
Well, they sure didn't see that one coming, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I find maddening lately is the number of people who post online, I don't need pepper spray, I've got a gun.
Yeah.
Those are two completely different tools. You know, that's like saying, I don't need vice grips, I got a screwdriver. What the hell did you just say? You
know? Yeah.
If you analyze the scenarios that we can get ourselves in, the likelihood of a particular scenario happening, like, are you more likely to be involved in an active shooter situation or be involved into somebody's breaking into your car?
Right.
You're a lot more likely to walk out in the middle of the night and find a bad guy in your car than some of these other, you know, far-fetched ninja attack scenarios people daydream about. And you really need to have the tools and the plan ahead of time in order to handle that stuff correctly. Otherwise, you are going to end up in one of Claude's columns on a negative outcome.
Well, and so it's funny, too, because people are like, well, why would you go out and confront someone that's breaking into your car? And I can absolutely tell people for certain that it is entirely possible to walk up to your vehicle, no matter how hard you are wearing on your vehicle, and suddenly encounter someone at your driver's door from your back bumper that you never saw them there until magic presto, they're there. And now it's like, okay, here you are, you know?
Well, in the case I was talking about a couple minutes ago, a dude was leaving for the morning, pre-dawn, and hey, dude's in my car. He wasn't going out to confront a car burglar. It was what, you know, in the military, they would call a meeting engagement. Nobody was looking for contact. It just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And those scenarios happen all the time. You don't get this big flare where, you know, like a bank robbery type thing, a dude walks in with a ski mask and announces loudly, this is a robbery, stand and deliver. You know, it's way more ambiguity to that.
Well, I mean, it'd be nice if it were that obvious.
Oh, yeah, sure would be, you know. It sure would be. Yeah. But that's not how it works in real life.
No.
Not
typically. That would be the real world equivalent of shooter ready standby, you know.
Uh-huh.
And
absolutely.
Shooter ready standby. I'm not saying it never happens, but it doesn't happen very often, you know.
Yep.
So you mentioned pepper spray, and that's something else, too, that a lot of people I don't think consider is that, you know, if you look at the statistics, a lot of the violence that is likely to be done to us is likely to be done to us by people we know personally or are even related to by blood. And I don't think maybe enough people consider that as well. And there's a friend of ours that I won't get into details or specifics, but needed to utilize force against a close family member. And had the gun been the only option, that would have looked a lot different than it did. But luckily, pepper spray was available and was utilized pretty effectively. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, I know the case you're talking about. That was absolutely the right call. And you know, would have been, you know, a tragic news event otherwise if it had just gone to guns.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I point out, because so many people know, you know, it's such a famous case, I can use the names, Zimmerman, you know, when he confronted Trayvon Martin, if he had been able to do the smart thing and pepper spray Trayvon and back off and wait for the cops to show up, would we even know who George Zimmerman was?
Mm-mm.
The answer is no. You'd have never heard about that incident because it wouldn't have turned into what it turned into. And, you know, I've seen people argue, well, it was justified shooting. You know, he won in court. But at what cost? You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees, lost his house, marriage broke up. He's virtually unemployable. You know, if he takes a job someplace, you got to worry about protesters showing up. At what cost?
Right.
And anytime you can avoid that kind of thing, something I've noticed in my years of doing this, that if you use enough force at a low level early enough, that you often don't have to use more force later to dig yourself out of a hole.
Right.
And you see this in police work a lot. One of the most glaring ones that people can pull up is the Kyle Dinkheller shooting, where the car stop.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Chuck. Theoretically, I don't need to do it, but we're going to run over time later on if I don't. We're going to talk about Dinkheller when we get back. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. So we're talking with Chuck Haggard right now, and we're going to get into enough force early enough. And you're gonna bring up the Kyle Dinkheller murder. And please continue.
You know, it's easy to find that video online. Really tragic outcome. Really, really tragic outcome. And sorry, I got people going by on mountain bikes now.
No, that's okay.
It's a busy area next to the Oregon Trail.
Hey, you have died of dysentery. Anyway, continue.
No, I actually just walked through the ruts of the real Oregon Trail. No kidding.
That's pretty cool. I'm just happy that I made the joke I made, because every child of the 80s knows exactly what I mean.
Yep.
Dinkheller.
If you look at what he was faced with, if he had deployed OC early, maybe used his ass baton effectively, would have never degenerated into a running gunfight between two cars in which he lost.
Yeah.
You know, anytime it goes to guns, the magic BB could hit you and you're done.
Yep.
So anytime I can keep it from going to guns, I'm going to keep it from going to guns. You know, if you read your Sun Tzu, that's a smart thing to do, is win the battle before the battle and win the battle without fighting the battle. That's a smart thing to do. Dinkheller is a police scenario, and a lot of people are like, well, that's the cops. I think it absolutely applies in different scenarios I've seen in civilian self-protection, concealed carry, things like that. Zimmerman being a case, if he had used enough force early enough and a little bit better tactics, that would have never degenerated into a shooting. And then where would he have been in his life without, you know, being hundreds of thousands of dollars in the hole, et cetera, et cetera. And Kyle Dinkheller would have saved his own life by using enough force decisively early enough, and not letting it get the guns. But, you know, tragically, in both cases, that's not what happened.
Well, and the other thing, too, and this is, you know, I am observing. I am not criticizing the dead, because I'm not a big fan of criticizing the dead. But the force he did use, he did not use effectively. And even
At any level,
nope.
He didn't utilize his verbal commands. If you're talking about Dinkheller, he did not utilize his verbal commands well. He lacked emotional control, got way too wound up, didn't apply OC. I don't think tasers were really a thing yet. Didn't apply his baton well, and then didn't utilize any interpersonal tactics well. He was a big dude. He literally could have grabbed that guy and just flattened him, but he didn't decisively do any of that.
Yeah, and even when it went to guns, I want to say he emptied a magazine and reloaded, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a minute since I've watched it, but every one of those rounds is a potential fight stopping hit, and the only round he put on that guy was, you know, low below the diaphragm, as Tom Givens, you know, is famous for quoting, what do people shot below the diaphragm do after they're shot there, whatever they were doing before they were shot there. So it's kind of a failure at every level. Once again, not criticizing the dead, because he paid for it. He paid for it. But observing, you know?
Well, and I don't want to, not criticizing the dead, but if we don't AAR these things, then they died in vain.
Yeah.
You know, he who ignores history is doomed to repeat it. That Sandy Anna guy was pretty smart.
Yeah.
And I don't want, you know, I don't want that death to be in vain, or any of them, quite frankly, that we can learn from.
Right. So if you're going to be in the personal protection field, and I say personal protection not in like a, not in an executive protection sense, but in a, what most people would consider a self-defense sort of hobby or whatever. And I think of it more as like personal protection. being able to acutely judge your own strengths and weaknesses, being able to think about ambiguous scenarios versus just clear-cut scenarios, and being able to act decisively when it's important and also with skill. Would you say that kind of boils everything down into what we really need to be able to do?
Really kind of does. Really kind of does. Too many people fail to take Dirty Harry's advice on knowing your limitations. and that takes some real honest introspection for people to do that. And sometimes that's very uncomfortable. It's one of the failings of the human race that we often fail to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can, you know, from my own personal experience, and so you've known me the entire time that I have been working inside of this industry, and some of the thoughts and ideas that I had when I first started out, I look back on them now and go, wow, that was really dumb. I'm really embarrassed by those. and, you know, I'm sure, I hope at least, because if not, then it means I have stopped advancing my practice of this particular art. But like, I hope that 5-6 years from now, I'll be able to look back at this time frame and go, some of that was still pretty dumb, John. You know, and it's not comfortable. It's not comfortable. And sometimes it's even upsetting, but like, that's what we need to be able to do. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're not continuing to evolve as a person, you're stagnant, you know, and things like swamp water or stagnant, that's not a good place to be.
Right. So we got a couple minutes left. You're going to be teaching at Polypalooza 5, yeah?
I am.
Do you know what you're presenting yet, or do you just know you're presenting something?
It looks like it's probably going to be a block of my small pistol skills and maybe integrating OC into the muck paradigm, but you know, that's always subject to change. So, but that's where I think I'm going to be, which, you know, particularly the second part of that, integrating OC into the managing unknown contacts paradigm, would be exactly the sort of thing, the software skills you and I were talking about earlier, that people need to work on, you know, beyond just pistol skills, tactical carbine, things like that.
Yeah. What's the famous quote from Craig? If you walk into a shower and can't keep, and there's 12 other dudes there and you can't keep 6 of the 12 from having their way with you, you don't need another carbine course, something?
Yeah, carbine, tactical carbine course, probably the last thing you need.
Yeah, I clean that quote up a lot, but yep. That's kind of the thought there. So if you guys are interested in Polypalooza, it's the weekend of August 17th. It's going to be the final Polypalooza ever. All of the funds, all the trainers there are donating their time. And all the funds are going to benefit the children of Paul Gomez, who was instrumental in a lot of the things that people are doing today inside of the training community. Melody and I are going to be presenting some of our apparent material out there. And if you are interested in buying a ticket to that, you can go to tinyurl.com/Paul, the letter E, Palooza, P-A-L-O-O-Z-A, and the number 5, and that will take you to the Eventbrite sign-up page. But tickets are available now, and it's going to be an awesome, awesome time. I highly recommend it to everyone. Now, if people want to train with you outside of that event, where can they find you at, Chuck?
www.agiletactical.com is my website. I have a Facebook page, Agile Training and Consulting. Got my calendar up, relatively up to date. You know, I'm a bit of a Luddite, but I've got it currently up to date on the site, and got things posted in both places.
Nice. Nice, man. So what would be one, and then we got to go, but like one final thought you would leave people with in 60 seconds or less?
You know, Dirty Harry, I'll go back to him. Man's got to know his limitations. Woman's got to know their limitations. Be honest with yourself. Take stock of where you're at, and then look realistically at where you need to go.
Nice, man. Nice. I appreciate it. Well, Chuck, thank you again for everything that you have done for me in particular, as far as helping me along my own personal journey here, and also in the Iron Parent material too. And I don't think a lot of people realize this, but that course material was not created in a vacuum, and you were certainly one of the people that was instrumental in it being a thing. And we really, really appreciate that. So
I appreciate the thought. You know, this stuff is not, it's not ours to own. It's the physics of the universe. I think it's our job to pass it along.
Yeah, man. Definitely. I think one of my favorite things that Pat Rogers ever said, Uncle Pat, who I know was dear to you as well, is he always said he never had an original idea in his life. He was standing on the shoulders of giants, and even that idea he probably stole from somebody, you know? So
he was the littlest giant I ever met.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that is accurate. So anyway, I appreciate it, Chuck. Enjoy the rest of your day, sir. Thank you for apologize to your dogs for me interrupting their Chuck time. And I'll talk to you soon, brother, okay?
My pleasure.
All right.
Glad to be on.
Yeah. Hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio, and keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out, and we appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.